This very exciting talk is called My Computer is Bigger Than Yours, and I realize that might not be true. It's a talk of attitude, and it's a talk that's trying to get a particular message across about some of the things we need to do in Linux so that we can be happy and joyous players in enterprise computing. This is some work I started over a year and a half ago, and it's progressed pretty slowly because I do a lot of little things and try to finish some of them. Okay, here comes the big description. Okay, this is your computer. This is vaguely the typical home computer that people have, maybe connected to the net. I don't know, it's got a couple of disks. It's got a CPU, bit of RAM, a couple of Ethernet interfaces. It's a pretty exciting machine. Okay, the computer that I'm calling mine is actually Anton's computer, but it isn't really Anton's computer. For example, the one that we use belongs to Centrelink as part of their Linux lab team. Damn it, how did that happen? Okay, so we've got lots of CPUs, okay? We've got lots of RAM, we've got lots and lots and lots of disks, and we've got more Ethernet interfaces than you can comfortably just point at and go, oh, look at that one, isn't that nice, blinking lights. And, you know, but then we share CD-ROM drives. Okay, now we get to the exciting part of the show, a picture of me, which you've seen before, so don't be shocked. Okay, this is your computer, right? It does happen to be mine and lives in my lounge room at the moment. But you know, that's about the size of it. That's your computer. And coming up is a small version of my computer, eventually. Or Anton's computer, or Centrelink's computer. Okay, down the bottom where my right hand is, there's sort of disk drawer things, and you can whack lots of drawers into it. And Anton, the biggest one of these things you've seen is how many rack units? Okay, 20 rack units. Rock and roll. It's big. Might not have the most CPUs, but it rocks and it compiles a kernel in about 5 seconds. Okay, so availability and serviceability. My customer wants the machine to be up all the time and he's got a service contract that says it's going to be so. Otherwise, we don't get our money, get fired, can't go to conferences, got to sell the car. Sell the house, it's been fun, okay, it doesn't work well. So we've got to do what the customer says. If we want the computer to be up lots and lots, one of the great things in the world is hot plug. Okay, computer never needs to be down, Ethernet interface plays up, we swap it out, disk plays up, everything's rated. Okay, let's say that particular disk is failing. Our logs say so, you know, var log kern.log or whatever the other heretic distros call their logs that have kernel messages, says, you know, media error or some rubbish. I don't know if it says that because I've never seen this happen. But which of my 540 disks is that? How do I know? Well, an interesting little story to embarrass Anton yet again. Anton was given a short window to run some benchmarks on one of these big boxes over in Austin. 6 hours or something? They said, run your benchmarks, do your testing, do your stuff. And it had 300, 600 disks attached, a whole bunch of drawers, little Debian install on an external disk, if I'm right, otherwise I'm making it up. Plug in. Flick the switch, fans start going, kernel starts to come up, tries to mount the root file system. Where's the root file system? Couldn't find it. How are we going to do it? So we talked about it for a while. Oh, we can do it by label. Tried to do it by label, labeled the file system, attached it to another machine, labeled it, plugged it back in. Whoosh. Nah, look in the kernel code, can't mount the root file system using a label. Not good. So what's the solution in that case? Well, you power down all 600 disks. You leave your number one disk on, you boot, you know it's going to be DevSDA or something. And then you power all the disks on. You spin them up. You enable them and it's all very exciting. Now happily that's going to be the way it's going to work in the future, right? Sort of virtually because of all the exciting hot pluggy stuff. So one of the things we want to do is when we've got massive amounts of hardware is we want to be able to identify things very quickly and easily. And we want to be able to identify attributes of the hardware that are interesting for availability and serviceability. Okay, along comes vital product data. VPD, a great acronym for the noughties or whatever decade we're in. And PCI has VPD. PCI specification talks about it. You buy a PCI device and it may or may not have VPD because it's optional. Okay. So PCI 2.2 and 2.0 and 2.1 have this binary format for VPD. Well defined, really lovely. I wrote a Perl parser for it in a couple of hours. It was good fun. That's not the Unix way. So what you really want is some text format that you can bang through awk and sed and Perl and, you know, all your favorite text formatting stuff. AIX, that Unix operating system, sold by IBM, uses a textual representation of the PCI VPD stuff. Okay? What does this look like? There you go. It's all readable, it's all beautiful, and there's a whole bunch of fields and they've all got values, and what does it all mean? I don't know. Okay, top line's the description. So it's a 16-bit SCSI disk drive. AX is the AIX name. Looks like an AIX name, doesn't it? It's actually a Linux 2.4 DevFS name, which is quite nice. We've got the manufacturer type model. We've got the YL is the physical location. Fields starting with Y are system specific. So this is from an IBM P-series machine, RS6000. So if we read the location from right to left, we know it's target 8 on integrated SCSI bus 1, on backplane 1, in drawer 9, on rack 1. Okay, now, so when you see something in your logs about dev SCSI host 0, bus 0, target 8, LUN 0, something weird happening, and you've got this information, then you walk along and you go, okay, rack 1, I've only got one rack, this is good. You know, draw 9. Ah, cool. Plane 01, okay, that's there. Bus 1, target blah, that disk, right, ripped it out. Ooh, I didn't, you know, power down the slot or something. So you can find things, that's good. FRU number, it's like a family of part numbers, if you like. You know, an old disk model becomes redundant. There's an equivalent model that can replace it, and the FRU number stays the same. Exciting stuff. The firmware release level. Problems you're seeing might be related to firmware level, so you want to know what that is. Go to the website. Oh, I need to upgrade my firmware. Download, you know, run the DOS utility or whatever it is. Serial number. When you walk over to that machine and you're about to pull the disk out, if you can actually see the serial number, you want to make sure it's the right one, yeah? You don't want to mess around, go, and then an hour later start seeing the error messages come again. So there's something else you can check. So there's all sorts of interesting gear. The Z fields are all device specific, and Z0 in particular is about the only interesting one that I understand there. And that's the first 8 bytes that you get out of a standard SCSI inquiry. So you say to a SCSI device, give me a whole bunch of useful information about yourself, and it goes, and gives you about 32 bytes of stuff. And that's the first eight. A question? That is an excellent question, and I'll give you the $10 for asking it later, and I'll explain that to you. That's coming up. Okay. Right. Okay, so once we can get VPD for all our important components and, you know, stick it all in our pocket or get easy access to it, then we've got, like, an inventory of all our hardware. So not surprisingly, we say, oh, we have a hardware inventory. I wish this was faster. Okay, one important thing is that before a service event or a fault takes place, you want to have your hardware inventory available. You don't want to start getting errors from the disk or see a disk totally disappear and then go, "Oi, disk, give us all the info about you." And the disk sits there and goes, "I hurt, I'm in pain." So, was that a question?
All the paper tunnels, all redundancy on paper tunnels, all clustering, all about having multiple paths. How do you deal with that?
Don't know. How's that for an answer? But it's obviously something I need to think about. I mean, certainly when we're talking about... The question was, when you've got redundant paths to chunks of hardware, how do you identify them? Is that, or?
That's correct. And that is the thing that is all about space fiber tunnel, because you may get 600 disks.
Yep.
But basically, if you lose the top, swapping a disk is not going to fix it. Right? So the basic thing in redundancy is that the current model of designing redundant hardware is that for every peripheral that you have out there, you provide multiple tops.
Yep.
And they are all active at the same time.
Yep.
Some of them may be active, some of them may be passive. And that is a very difficult thing depending on your space in razor rate. And then the story is of all this model of naming devices goes out of the window. Because
yep.
It implies a single path.
Yep.
Right? And it's a deal with it, and that requires, as normally, another layer of abstraction dealing with it becomes much more complex.
We'll hopefully talk about that very shallowly later, because it's, I mean, the depth that you're talking about isn't something I've thought about. So logical naming of devices, when you've got multiple paths to devices, gets very interesting. That's your point? Is that a good summary?
And what do you deal with it at this point in time?
This isn't being actively used apart from to see what it looks like and how it compares to what AIX is doing. So hopefully it will become serious, but there's lots of things we need to sort out first. Yep. I mean, one of the basic issues here is persistent naming of devices and doing it in a logical way. And we'll get onto that a bit later. And, you know, I think the answer is actually quite simple for the overall problem. I don't know about the specifics of the multiple paths to devices and all that sort of thing. Okay, so our hardware inventory has to be available before a service event takes place, because otherwise the bit of hardware in question might not answer and we might not be able to get all of the useful information. The other thing is you want it to be persistent across reboots, because you want to detect boot time hardware failures. Okay, disk didn't spin up. Aha. And you want to do change management. This disk with this serial number or whatever, or UUID, has disappeared, but another one has appeared in exactly the same physical location. What do you want to do? Well, duh, I want to call the new one what the old one was called. So there's a whole lot of management issues here. Okay, Here's what I think of the stages in the whole hardware inventory process. Throw things at me, select, suggest improvements, suggest better ideas. But the first thing you want to do is talk to a whole bunch of devices on your system and say, what do you got, what do you got, what do you got? Tell me about yourself. Give me useful information. Come on. And you're going to talk to all the devices in different ways. Because, as somebody asked, SCSI devices aren't PCI devices, so therefore don't have PCI BPD in them. So you've got to do something else. And that's an interesting problem. Storage and change management. Okay, you need some sort of database to store this gear in. And when changes occur, you want to manage them, you know, probably do some sort of history management, you know, this disk blah disappeared 2 weeks ago. It's good to know those sorts of things. Yes, because then you realise, no, it's not the disk, it's the slot. Yeah. Yep, a family of parts, yeah, you keep seeing failures there. That's also good to know. IBM Desk Star Disk, or whatever. Hello? Sorry, well, that's where the talk ends. No. The rendering part is boring, okay? You've got a whole bunch of stuff in a database and you want to dump it. One of the first things I did to learn about this was, once you find out what my current database format is and are suitably horrified, the rendering, you know, you can cat files, you can have a web browser interface, you can probably do some fancy SNMP stuff, you can define your own client-server protocol, you know, all of this stuff has been done. So it's not interesting, it's just mechanics. So what I'm interested in is the first two stages. Okay, on P-Series Linux, this is a PowerPC-based boxes, and there's an open firmware device tree, and at boot time, the kernel makes a copy of it available in the file system under proc device tree. I could show you one of those, but I don't have one that I prepared earlier. Well, I do have several, but it's going to be boring. Okay, what happens on P-Series is that the firmware goes and talks to all of the PCI 2.0 and 2.1 devices and says, you got some VPD, man? Come, gives you VPD. Okay, cool, I got that. Okay, and it drops it in as a binary file, adds the physical location, okay? The device itself can't report its physical location. So as the firmware walks around finding things, it goes, oh, you're a physical location, blah, updates the checksum information, and buries it in the device tree in a file called IBM, BPD. Excellent. So, this is what I use for my database. I make a copy of proc device tree, and I put it under var lib device tree for want of a better place at the moment. I mean, who really cares except that since it changes, we've got to put it on the var to please the FHS and all that sort of stuff. The collection is easy, right? Find var lib device tree dash name, IBM, BPD, find all those files, run a little progy over them, parse them, and produce a Linux, BPD file sitting next to it. And that's the textual representation you saw before that happened to be for a SCSI device but is equivalent for PCI devices. One of the beautiful things here is that I render the whole thing as I store it, which means the final rendering stage is really easy. It's just find all the things called Linux, BPD and cat them out. La 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 la. Okay, SCSI. Da, 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 da. Okay, most SCSI devices contain a certain amount of useful data about themselves. And it's obviously not in the PCI format because they're not PCI devices. And, you know, people make different types of devices going, yeah, 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 I'm not going to do the same thing as you. So SCSI devices can be spoken to by sending SCSI inquiry commands, and under Linux, you can use the SCSI generic interface, which uses an IOCTL to the generic SCSI device, and you send a particular IOCTL and munch some stuff in there, and back comes a block of binary data. I could show you binary data, but that would be boring. So then what we do is we go, okay, we want to render that into Linux, VPD files, and I've got a short template file that describes all the disks I've seen so far and works on them, and the template file is 5 lines. And that handles, so far I think I've only seen IBM hard disks, I've seen IBM CD-ROMs, and I've seen our wonderful Sony CDR thingy, and I've seen SCSI enclosures. And a lot of these things can be handled nice and generically, especially things from the same vendor. The only reason one of the 5 lines is in there because the hardware guys ended up with a bug in their inquiry data in a certain family of IBM disks. Otherwise, I could chuck some of that away. Okay. Currently, because one of the things I'm trying to do is actually replace an AIX command called lsvpd, I'm trying to make it all exactly the same. And a certain amount of that was just hard-nosed reverse engineering until I got to the point where, for, say, a CD-ROM, my thing was printing out, you know, CD-ROM drive, and AIX was printing out either multimedia CD-ROM drive or other CD-ROM drive. And I'm just like, where are they getting this from? And I've looked through the inquiry data, and sure, yeah, I mean, it's all different. And there are so many differences, and I don't have enough examples to work from, because there's about one type of IBM CD-ROM drive in all the things you buy. And, you know, not many people have SCSI CD-ROM drives floating around the place. So finally it came time to find an AIX person who knew about this, and it was like, oh yeah, in inquiry page C7, byte 32 has a value of 6 if it's a multimedia CD-ROM drive. And I'm just like, okay, yep, I should have known that. So the templates only allow you to, the extended VPD stuff is that the templates only pull out certain fields for you if it's a device you've seen, if it's a device I've seen before. Otherwise it prints out, you know, serial number, all the stuff, all the standard stuff at the top of the SCSI inquiry, formats it nicely and gives you what we saw before on the screen. And I'm happy to say that for all the IBM disks that I see, I can produce the same output. And CD-ROM guys, I can produce exactly the same output as the AIX guys? I think so. And they've been working on it for years, so I'm really happy about that. Okay. VPD, okay. One of the things here is that I can get the VPD out of PCI 2.0 and 2.1 devices by looking in the device tree. But let's say I want to do this cross architecture. I want to do this under Intel on my, you know, 16 CPU Intel box. I want to do this on my, you know, Z series mainframe. I want to do it on my HP super duper machine, whatever that is. Does anyone know, for fairness, does anyone know the name of an HP super duper machine? Any, you know? Thank you, that'll do, that's good advertising. Hey Anton, where's the fastest kernel compile being done, mate? Anyway, let's not go there. Okay, so on PCI 2.0, 2.1 devices, the VPD is stored in an expansion ROM. So what we can do is we can say, okay, PCI configuration space, is there an expansion ROM for this device? And it goes, yeah. And you go, ah, excitement's building. Okay, has it got an address? Nah, there's no address assigned. It's been unassigned by the BIOS or something. Let's assign an address. Okay. Is it disabled? Well, if it didn't have an address assigned, it better have been disabled. Either way, let's enable it. Yeah, Okay, check the PCI data structure in the ROM. It's in a particular position. See if there's an address for VPD. Oh, there is. This is so exciting. We read the VPD. We disable unassign the address of the ROM as necessary, and then the machine locks up at some stage during all that. And because it locks up so tightly, I can't figure out what's happening. So if anyone knows how to do this, if anyone knows how to access the contents of PCI 2.0, 2.1 expansion ROMs, I implore you, speak to me. I'm a gentle person. You know, I'll buy you a beer. Okay, under PCI 2.2, it is. However, there's not a lot of them. And this is actually nice and easy, because this is really well defined, and it works. Now, I have to ask whether it works nice and easily under PCI 2.2, and I'm wondering if that's why they changed it, because people wanted access to this garbage under PCI 2.0 and 2.1, and the whole mechanics of messing with PCI and expansion ROMs was so awful that they went, nobody can seem to do that. But I do have the PCI architecture book at home, and I haven't opened the cover yet, so I'll have a read of that, see if it helps me. But if you know anyone who loves PCI and knows all this stuff, it'd be exciting to hear from them. Under open firmware and all that, it's actually a little bit easier, because on sort of your P-Series RS6000 boxes, they don't tend to unassign the addresses for the ROMs. There's a note in the PCI spec that says, you know, at boot time, the ROMs get unassigned and disabled. And that could be a one-way operation, I'm not sure. In fact, I'm sort of really worried it is, because it's not. Woohoo! Okay, I mean, yeah, it's really easy to lock things up when you don't know what you're doing, so if you know how to, yeah. Ha, mate. Rock and roll. Okay. 17, getting there, okay. What's happening in 2.5? Along comes TIFFS and makes everyone's life easier. Does it make my life easier? I don't know. One thing we could do is we could expose VPD under CIFFS in a consistent format. That'd be great. Because then we'd have to parse lots of different stuff. We'd have to have templates in the kernel. And I reckon that's a patch that'd be accepted tomorrow. Okay, so the other extreme is to leave things how they are and expose no VPD, which means you use a whole bunch of ad hoc interfaces like the SCSI generic magic IOCDL for doing the inquiries and hope that everything works nicely. Middle ground might be to say, okay, the interface for getting this stuff really sucks, and it'd be really nice if from user space you could just cat a file and get this gear. So what you could do is have an interface that exposes stuff in its sort of native nice raw format, and then you can do what you need to do with it. And that takes out some of the tough steps. I guess especially things like if the PCI 2.0, 2.1 stuff needs kernel support, then there's no reason not to drop something into CIFFS that says, okay, here's the VPD, it was really hard to get, but since I'm the kernel, I can do it. Okay. At the moment, I've got this open firmware device tree structure that has all these VPD files in it. Okay, the whole thing doesn't need to have a tree-like structure, but in some cases it's useful. People have said inside IBM, who are the only ones who have seen any of this stuff, have said, well, I'm working on, you know, Intel-based boxes. Can we use a CIFFS-like structure? And the answer is, yeah, why not? On P-Series, we can link between them, show the connections. Very exciting. However, you know, that might not be the way to do it. There might be a better way. Persistence and change management. Okay, we've already pretty much established that hardware inventory needs to persist across reboots so that you can do all sorts of exciting things. I think I've said all that before, except that, you know, the change management is interesting and probably non-trivial. I haven't thought about it too hard. My current implementation just says rm-rs var lib device tree, cp-a var proc device tree to var lib device tree, and I start from scratch because I'm just sort of doing proof of concept work. I reckon this stuff can be used for persistent device naming because it's got all the information you need. The persistent device naming stuff doesn't need to go to the devices themselves and say, what's your serial number, what's your UUID, what's this other exciting thing, yada, yada, yada. There's the AIX tool that you run and it says, disk blah has disappeared and there is another one in the same location, what would you like to do? That's the Diag thing. Things like Red Hat's Kudzu tool do some of this sort of thing already. So I've got to have more of a look at exactly what they do and what the limitations are and how they scale to super big things and whether they address physical location and all that sort of exciting stuff. Runtime change management is no different to boot time, right? You're just talking to hot plug. And in fact, under 2.5, I think all sometime in the future, all devices are going to be added via hot plug. And this will be the place to handle the change management and to notice that hardware has changed. Okay, persistent device naming. Under Linux 2.4, you can drop a whole bunch of aliases or links or whatever you want to call them into DevFS, look stuff up in a database, blah, 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 blah. Under 2.5, all this can be resolved in hot plug. As I just mentioned, device gets added, you go, oh, what's it going to be called? Get the information about it. One sort of released public project, yes. I would expect that it would help for daisy chaining FireWire devices and giving them names, yeah. I mean, the simple thing is that your home PC with two IDE disks and all that doesn't really need all of this gear. Because when something goes wrong, you can open, you can pull the cover off and go, oh, there's smoke coming out of that. But yeah, when it comes to consistent and persistent naming for your USB devices and stuff, it can help there. It depends, yeah. If you've got two USB hard drives, it depends which one you plug in first at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And,
I have this problem. I have an Ethernet cable in the IS card and I have an Ethernet USB card.
Yep.
So, depending on which one I plug in first, which one is it?
Yep. PCM, CIA, Ethernet card, USB card. Yep. But none of them are consistent and none of them scale, I don't think. I'd also like to see the current ones because I looked at stuff a year and a half ago and went, eh, and plowed into this stuff. Okay, so there's this released IBM project, as you'll see on the last slide or second last slide. The stuff I've done hasn't been released. It's got to go through a little approval process. There's been no problems because basically nobody's put it up for approval yet. I thought somebody else was doing it for me. Hasn't happened. That's okay. We'll push that ahead. This thing is out there. And it helps you name SCSI devices via hot plug and all that stuff. And what this does is it does its own SCSI inquiry. Clearly, if you've got your hardware inventory done before you start trying to name devices, then this persistent naming type stuff, for example, for SCSI, could just be a thin layer around the hardware inventory management. Now, I sort of understand why the SCSI name guys do the SCSI inquiry stuff themselves and say, what's your serial number, what's your UUID, what's this, what's that, what's your model number? That's because there isn't a hardware inventory management system. So hopefully in the future, those things can be a nice thin layer. So in Solaris, they have the sort of physical devices, and then they have logical links to them. Yep. So I don't know what they do for persistence there. Okay. Okay, so there's open firmware on Intel. We have to get the message to exciting people inside IBM and tell them what the current best practice is. Yes.
How do you deal with the modern problem on a large tank that you may have, say, 200 switches? Each of the switches may connect to, say, 20 arrays, and then each of those arrays may have, say, 2 to the power 23 minus 1 lump. Theory. Right? So the normal thing was always on the scale devices, we just scanned all the firmware scanned all the devices,
yep.
Right? If you had scanned 2, 1 bus, 7 devices,
yep.
Piece of cake. On those fiber channel scans, the space is just too large to scan it extensively on every group.
Yep.
How do you deal with it?
Haven't thought about it. But that's a good question, and that's something that is obviously going to have to be thought about. And it, you know, and it's worth looking at what's already been done. Yeah. You know, I'll have to talk to more AIX people and see what they can tell me. So.
Well, it'll ask for what lung support and if it's bringing that.
Okay, I'm getting very conscious of the time, which means I've got to hurry and talk in a confused manner. These guys, the Distributed Management Task Force, have got this common information model, pronounced CIM, I guess, C-I-M. This seems to be the future of all sorts of system management information, including hardware inventory, and I've been going, yeah, maybe we should use this, maybe we should use this, and then I look back through my email, I was just happening to search for URL and I found somebody who's the blah, blah, blah manager for one of the IBM series saying, oh yeah, well, we're going to be using this in the future. And I've gone, okay, well, perhaps it should be pushed as the standard. So I'm trying to find out what it's all about and see if I can use it. I haven't got very far. Okay, the status. Okay, originally it was just a Perl script that parsed gear. Then I went through the and probed for SCSI devices, matched them up with the equivalent with the adapter in the device tree, and dropped the Linux VPD files in the right spot so that you knew the physical location and all that sort of thing. Then I went, okay, Perl's not available on my Debian system early in the boot sequence, and it's not really on other Linux systems, so I rewrote it in C. It's pretty compact. It's a couple thousand lines of C code and shell script, probably two-thirds C, a third shell scripts. I happen to think the shell scripts are more maintainable, otherwise I'd write the lot in C. And I happen to hate C. Lots more work to be done. We've got to get this thing through the open source approval process inside IBM. As I said, there's no problems with it, it just hasn't been done. That's one of the things I'm going to start doing when I get back, so other people can look at it and go, nah, it's crap, do it this way, because that's what the whole open source thing is about, right? So, apart from the proliferation of excellent questions that were asked during the talk, and bearing in mind that the next talk starts in 2 minutes, please feel free to shower me in $50 notes. Ask any other questions. Yes? Sorry, this is only for... Okay, the question is it only about direct attached storage? It's not about network attached storage. Well, Okay, it's primarily about direct attached, but you just got to make sure that there is some way of managing the network attached stuff, and it isn't something I've thought about. But yeah, and that's the other thing. It's not just storage, it's your Ethernet cards. It's only the interesting stuff. It's the stuff that you've got lots of. There's one tiny bit of the persistent naming argument that I forgot, and that is the first time you attach a device, like a new disk or a new Ethernet card, it really doesn't matter what you call it, right? As long as you give it the next name. And it's only across reboots or when you hot plug something out and hot plug a replacement in that you then want to manage it and probably give it the same name you had last time. I mean, you might disagree, but you know, if you've got 10 disks and they're called, you know, disk 0, disk 1 through to disk 9, is that all you need? Anything else? Okay, apparently the evaluation forms are very important. Please look for the column marked shite and just tick under there. Thank you.